comic books, movies, TV, and more. Nerds are everywhere. It's time to assemble! It's Nerds United, a Jittery Monkey podcast. Here's your host, Greg Mahochko.
Welcome to a brand new edition, brand new episode of Nerds United, found on jitterymonkey.com. I'm Greg Mahochko, and my guest this time around is a longtime friend of mine. I don't know exactly how many years, but I know it's in more than five, and I think less than ten. But anyway, I've gone to midnight showings of nerd-related, comic-related movies with this guy. We've been to some pro wrestling shows. We've had a lot of wings and a few adult beverages together in the past. We've sat together and watched a lot of movies, a lot of entertainment, and I'm excited to bring him in because not only do we have comics and a lot more in common, but he's also a creator both of the comics and also music. So it is with a lot of excitement that I welcome to Nerds United my friend Justin Holman. Justin, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Greg.
Like I said, super stoked about this one. I've been trying to get you on, but you're very busy, with your family of five and your wonderful wife and three amazing kids. And schedules are hectic, my friend, but I'm really excited to have you on the show.
I'm excited, man. They keep me really busy.
That and, of course, life in general. I mean, going back to school.
Life is good. I'm going back to school. I'm actually studying radiography, which is the art of shooting x-rays into your flesh and seeing your bones.
Pachoo!
Pachoo! Pachoo! I actually like it. It's really cool. It's tough, it's a lot of, I got to learn a lot of stuff. Every bone, every organ, there's a bunch of stuff in the bones that you wouldn't realize are in bones. You're like, man, I just thought it was a bone. I didn't know it had all that stuff, but it's really cool, man.
So let's find out how you got to the point where you're at now. Of course, we're taking this show on the road, so to speak, as we're in your man cave, which, by the way, is a stellar masterpiece. It's a work in progress, yet it's a masterpiece to your love for all things nerd. But before we get there, let's talk. You are from Southern Illinois, and aside from some time spent out in California with your band and some touring. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but you've been pretty much Southern Illinois born and bred and down here your whole life.
Yeah, definitely. I grew up, I was born in Mount Vernon at the old Good Sam Hospital.
And very familiar.
Yeah, very familiar. And I lived in Ewing, which is like a town really close to Renly College. And there's like 300 people that live there in that small town. And I have three brothers that I grew up with there and my mom and dad. Just a small town life. I even went to a grade school there for K through 8. And then I transferred to Benson High School whenever I went into whenever I graduated. And I went there 4 years. And then, I did like a semester of college and then I started getting into music.
One of your childhood friends is one of my friends, mutual friends. So we got to give a shout out to Mike, who's going to be on the show in a future time, probably in a couple episodes or two. But you guys, you're growing up together, you're sharing these similar interests, and from there, a really lifelong friendship grows.
Yeah, it was really cool. Actually, Mike and I went to grade school together in Ewing. His father was, pastoring out in Frisco at the time. He moved away, and while during the time he moved away, I think he moved south to Metropolis. I started getting into comic books. So we were both kind of artsy kids. We liked to draw Ninja Turtles and stuff. But after he moved away, he was, drawing stuff and collecting comic books. And I started doing the same thing. And I remember, I think I was like in 7th or 8th grade, my teacher at the time was still friends with his father. And I was like, I asked him, I said, you remember Mikey? Whatever happened to Mike Stallard, And he's like, oh, I have his father's address if you'd like to get a hold of him. So I started pen-pounding him, We started, writing stuff, and I'd draw, a picture, a comic book picture, and send it to him, and he'd send one back, you know, and tell me the new issues he'd gotten or something, you know.
Awesome.
And because neither one of us had our license, we were still in grade school, you know. And we did that for like about a year or so, and then eventually we were able to convince our mom and dads to waste gas and to drive us to the other person's house, you know. We started hanging out, you know. And our friendship stayed the same, you know, just grew from there, because we both loved comic books, we loved artwork. We both loved, you know, we collected, like, at that time, cards were the thing, you know. It wasn't Pogs. It was just like baseball cards, basketball cards, comic cards, Spider-Man cards, you know. It was, and that's some of the stuff that we were playing with at that time, you know. It was neat.
And it's amazing, you know, how you can see something now and it would take you back to, you know, your childhood and, you know, just the good times, good memories with those friends. You know, heck, before we started recording today, I, you know, was out in your backyard and your boys out there playing wrestling tag with, you know, a couple of the neighbor kids. And I'm thinking, man, I've never heard of wrestling tag. I played freeze tag and TV tag and tag and, you know, all these other kinds of tags. They're like, yeah, we created it. I said, well, crap, man, that's awesome.
Yeah, dude, I didn't even know about it until you just said it right now.
Basically, what I found wrestling tag is you run around, you push. There's some slapping involved.
Yeah, I think that's also called beating someone up.
But if you give it
that label, what can you do?
Yeah, it's a game.
Hey, Dad, it's wrestling tag. Well, does it have to involve punching each other in the face?
all right, so you go to college, SIU Carbondale, and about a semester there, you say you started getting into music, and music is a pretty, you know, important part of your life. As you would become one of the members of the band called Revis.
Right.
If you're not familiar with Revis, you know, I've been listening to them for 10 years now. and just, you know, ever since Places for Breathing came out, you can still pick it up on Amazon or on iTunes. It's an amazing album. I've interviewed you before for terrestrial radio about the band, and you know, I can't say enough good things about the music that you guys put out. Let's talk about how, you know, the forming of a band and how that came to be.
Okay, and thanks, man. Well, first off, I actually was going. I got an art scholarship to Ren Lake. I wasn't at SIU at the moment. My wife, she wasn't my wife at the time. My girlfriend was studying at that university, so I did spend a lot of time there. The band actually started with me, Robert Davis, a childhood friend that I grew up with in Ewing and Benton, and Nathaniel Cox, another childhood friend that I grew up with here in Benton. We started playing together. We were practicing out of a music store in Murfreesboro, which we were fortunate to have because Robert Davis's grandmother owned the music store, and so she had like all this equipment that we would get to use when the store was closed. That was a huge advantage for someone that was our age, because
basically free gear, right?
Right, exactly. And his uncle at the time played bass with us, and he taught us a lot, you know. He was way too old to be in a band with us, but it was great because he really did teach us quite a bit about just how, you know, how gigs work and, you know, just, you know, how you need to be tight. And so we learned quickly that music is, yes, it is creative, but at the same time, it's hard work. People don't write songs just on a whim.
Mm-hmm. Not good songs anyway.
It's possible, you know what I mean? There are people that just say, hey, I'm going to sit down and write an awesome song today, and they are able to do it, but, you know, it's hard work. Anyways, we started a band in Carbondale that was called Orco, you know, and we played for about a year and got pretty big, you know. We won a few Battle of the Bands, and we decided that we wanted to try to get signed. We had some original music that we were pretty positive about. We felt pretty strong about. We moved out to Los Angeles and worked with a friend of ours that was actually from West Frankfort, in the Southern Illinois area. He recorded a demo for us.
Was that Jay?
No, this is Scott. One of our friends, Scott. He's really Scott Alexander. That's his last name. Really nice guy. Really sweet guy. And he's actually a really good producer. He recorded us for a little while, and we did like a three or four song demo. We signed with a manager. We didn't like the manager. We kind of got stuck with him for a little while until Nathaniel's father stepped in, who was a lawyer, and got us out of that deal. because he was
Thanks,
just
lawyer dad.
He was, yeah, exactly. Nice. It was nice because it's his dad, so it was free. And so we got out of that deal, and we picked up a new manager. His name was John Zagata. When we were living in L.A. at the time in a loft downtown, I was sleeping on a bed I found in the alley, and everybody thought I was going to get hepatitis from it, which I might have. I don't know. I don't think I have hepatitis, though.
I would hope by now you would have got it checked out.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good.
Good. You look good.
Thank you. So we hooked up with John, and I know this is a long story.
No, you know what? That's what this is about.
We hooked up with John. At the time, it was myself, Robert, Nathaniel, and our drummer was Marcus Lidner, and our bass player, Bob Thiemann, who was from Peoria, who we actually met in Carbondale while we were Orko, and he took the place of Robert's uncle, Dan, who I said prior to that, you know,
right.
He was eventually not going to have to be in the band. He was about 20 years older than us. It just wasn't going to fit. So we were out there. We hooked up with John. He put us in contact with a guy whose name is, excuse me, Tommy Henriksen. He used to be a solo artist for Capitol on Capitol. He's a great guy from New Jersey. He talk like this, you know, this is what you do. And if he hears this, he's going to die laughing because he's a sweetheart. He really is a very talented producer. He's the type of guy that can hear something in a song that the writer would have never heard, and that's what he adds to it. So we worked with Revis, who was Orko at the time. He put together about a 6 or 7 song demo for us, which we pitched to us and John Zagata pitched to about 3 or 4 different labels, Maverick, Epic. Of course, we did Columbia because Epic and Columbia are both under Sony. We also pitched it to DreamWorks and I'm thinking Virgin. But we were really being wooed. Mostly we were being wooed by the Sony network, by Columbia and Epic. And we also had a serious offer from Maverick, which I believe that would have been Guy O'Siri at the time, who was the president then. When it came down to it, we were all excited to get signed. You know, we knew we had good music because our live music had really developed into something special. We were really clicking live. We could play live and sound like a signed band. And our original music, with the help of Tommy, was really starting to develop into some very mature things. We were just excited to get signed. But when you get put in that position where you have one label saying, listen, we're going to give you this much, but you get this in return, and we're talking like hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know. And it's not just going into my pocket. Most of the money that you get from a label is used to make the CD,
mm-hmm.
and to keep you on the road to promote it, because they're basically interested in making money, you know. And I don't hold that against them. That's just the way that it works. But we ended up really falling in love with a couple of the A&R guys there over at Epic. One of them in particular was Ken Commissar. You can look him up. He's worked with, you know, a lot of people. Michael Jackson, just a sweetheart of a guy. And he was one of the main reasons why I wanted to sign with Epic. I really trusted him. And I still do. I still think he's a great guy. So we signed with them, and I remember we signed with them, and they said, well, we got to get you guys in the studio. We got to get an album out by April. And this was probably October of 2002, yeah. So we were like, oh, crap, you know. And I was wanting to go home and see my girlfriend, you know, who's my wife now, because I was like, man, we've been hauling butt for so long, you know, trying to get signed. It had been 7 months at that point that we were in L.A. eating ramen noodles and nothing else.
Not even like an occasional macaroni and cheese?
Oh, yeah, well, mac and cheese.
Oh, when you decide to splurge.
Well, yeah, I'm feeling a little ritzy. From time to time, I would get off of my alley bed and make mac and cheese and then lay back down. But we said, well, they asked us, they said, who would you guys like to produce your album, you know, because we're Epic Records. We can get whoever we want. And Robert and Nathaniel and I were like, well, Linkin Park just sold 11, like 9 million records. Let's see if we can get Don Gilmore. At the time, Don, I think, was just finishing up Eve Six's second album, or I believe he may have also been finishing a Korn, no, not a Korn album, some other band. Needless to say, we were really interested in him. So what we did was we rented a rehearsal hall. We set our gear up. We invited Don to listen to us. I remember the morning so clearly. It was really early, about, I don't know, 9 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and normally, like, rock bands don't perform then, you know.
Right.
I haven't been speaking all day. I haven't been able to warm up. But, you know, he came to listen to us at 9 in the morning, you know, because he's got to record artists all day, so
right.
he wants to get this stuff over with, because he's got to pick his next project anyways, whether it's us or Avril Lavigne or whoever. Is that her last name?
Yeah, sure.
Whatever.
It was at one point anyway.
Oh, yeah, she's married to... Oh, yeah, it's Kroger or Walmart or something now. anyways, I think it's Kroger. Anyways, he came in, he listened to us, and I shook his hand. I was so excited to meet him because he had recorded both of the Eve Six albums. He had recorded the Linkin Park album, which I thought was tremendous, like production-wise.
Now that would have been Hybrid Theory.
Yeah, Hybrid Theory, their first one. And I mean, I can't say that I was in love with their music, but production-wise, beautiful, like really tight. A lot of people would consider it cookie cutter at this point in, you know, at this day and age, but I still have a lot of respect for what he did. He really did some good stuff. He stepped outside and left after he listened to us. We played Caught in the Rain, Seven, and I believe Spin. Those were the three songs we played for him. And about 10 minutes after he left, our manager got a phone call and hung up the phone, and he sounded like he was down. He's like, oh, okay. Sounded like he was down. He shut the phone, and he goes, guys, you got it. He's
nice.
Recording your album.
Nice.
And we freaked out.
I bet. I can imagine the celebration in that, you know, rehearsal hall.
Yeah, it was wonderful. And it was just wonderful. I mean, I was crying, smoking a cigarette at the time I smoked, and I was just like, this is just amazing. My dream has just come true. Like, like even further, you know.
Right.
Being signed is one thing. So we recorded with him, and then we went on the road to promote the album, you know. And I remember talking to Don one day, asking him, you know, what was it about us that made you pick us, you know, because you could have easily just done another album of someone that was already famous. Because
mm-hmm.
at the time, I believe the side project for Rage Against the Machine and the guy from Soundgarden,
Audioslave,
was presented to him. And I thought, and so was Evanescence. So he listened to Evanescence, he listened to Audioslave, and he also listened to us, and he picked us. So that's pretty cool, you know? And he was like, well, to be honest with you, one of the main reasons why I picked you was that it was 9 o'clock, and you hit every note that you're supposed to hit, and I know that that's hard. And I was like, whoa, man, shot to my, like, thank you. I promise my ego won't you know, my head will fit through the door. And he was also impressed with the way Robert played guitar, because Robert Davis is a fantastic guitar
player. Phenomenal guitar player.
He's amazing. And so and obviously Nathaniel, being the creative mind behind most of our writing, you know, he loved the songs. So we spent, you know, 1 month after he picked us developing the rest of the songs, and then we went in, and in 3 months we had the album, and we went on the road and started touring.
This is gonna cause much heartache to say, as much as it is to say, probably as it is gonna be for you to hear. The same night that you're having the Places for Breathing CD release party in Carbondale, I had just a couple days ago, before I'd heard of Revis, before I, you know, knew anything about the CD release party, I'd acquired a couple of free tickets to go over to Pops, which if you're from the Metro East or Southern Illinois, you know, Pops right there in Sauget, Illinois, across the river from downtown St. Louis, and it was a show, Trapped, Seether, and Smile, Empty Soul.
Yeah, Smile, Empty Soul.
And so I went there, and you know what? I've kind of been kicking myself in the behind you know, for you know, the last 10 years about that, because it would have been an opportunity. You know, I could have launched this you know, friendship 10 years, you know, 10 years ago rather than, you know, 6 years ago. So that was, you know, but
I'm sure that was a good show. You know, we toured a lot with every one of those bands.
Really?
Yeah, I mean,
I know you toured with Evanescence.
Oh yeah, but I mean, well, not toured. I should say we've met and played on a lot of summer, you know, like
festivals.
You know, the festivals.
Right.
Yeah, so we played, and Smile Empty Soul we played with quite a bit. Seether, not so much. We did festivals with them, and the band Trapped we played with quite a bit too. I'm still really good friends with their bass player Pete Sherrell. He's a great guy. And at one point we considered him to be the bass player for our second album, but it didn't work out. But Pete's still a really good friend of mine, and I like all those bands. They all came from our era. I kind of look at them as classmates, in a, you know, as you're growing up and going through school, because
right.
we all kind of went through tough stuff together. Getting signed's not the easiest thing, you know.
And it needs to be pointed out that, you know, shortly, I don't want to say shortly after you signed, but probably what, within 18 months. After you sign with, you know, Epic, there's some transitioning in the music industry, or was it a little bit more than 18 months?
No, I believe it was a little under 2 years, and I don't know the whole story. I know I can say that this much: we signed with a good label, but we also signed with a label that had a lot of people to promise stuff to. At the time, Korn was with them. Incubus was with them. Audioslave was with them.
You know, some of the top dogs.
I mean,
of
that year and the next 2 years, there was a lot of money going in. I believe there was a band called Vendetta Red.
Yep.
They got signed at the same time we did. They got a lot of cash pumped into them, and yet we sold probably twice as many albums as them. But that's just the way it works. I mean, like, I don't hold anything against any of those bands. They're going through the same. Everybody goes through the same thing. So it's kind of like, well, to each their own. You know, just good luck. Don't get yourself killed out there. But yeah, we got let go. Our second album that we were given to record and write. We were given like 2 or 3 months to record and write a second album. And that's not enough time. And the band was starting to fall apart internally. My wife was pregnant. I had just gotten married when we were recording this second album, and the band was definitely starting to fall apart. My absence was creating some bitterness. The writing process wasn't working very well. It just, the songs could have been there, but they were not developed. They were very, very weird songs, very eccentric.
Mm-hmm.
They were not Revis what someone would have expected for the sophomore album. So we recorded it. I'm not even going to mention who we recorded it with. His name isn't worth my time. But it was horrible. You know, it was just bad. And I wouldn't have wanted it to have gone out. That's not the main reason why we got dropped. The main reason why we got dropped is because there was a merger with Sony. And a bunch of bands, a bunch of people lost their jobs. So that was when Revis basically stopped. And that, would, I believe, would have been 2004.
In the latter stages of 2004, right?
Right, because that's when my son Dash was born. And I was, you know what, to be honest, it was kind of a relief to me because some of the relationships had really started to get strained. And I just didn't want to be doing it anymore. It was just really hard. It wasn't due to laziness. It was just that it wasn't fun to be around them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had lost the friendship part, and it had become all business.
Right.
And that sucks, you know. I mean, we eventually got it back, but that's what had happened. And so we took time off, and that's when I actually started working on my art more, because I originally, before the band, I had gotten an art scholarship, and I was really into drawing comic books and just illustration in general. So after we got dropped, I started focusing on that and my family, you know, my wife and my son.
And I don't want to, I don't want to spend the whole time talking about the band, but I know you guys tried in 2010 a little reunion. I happened to catch a live show that you guys did. You still rock, you know. good fan base. I know that the Revis Rebels, as they're called, they're always wanting more, but and I don't know if Revis will ever, reunite at any time down the road. But the way I look at Revis, it's man, I'm just so thankful that as a fan of the music and knowing you and knowing Robert and David and been able to get to know Kyle in the last couple of years as well.
Right.
I'm just so thankful, for the music that we've had, the stuff you guys put out for Places for Breathing, and then the songs that you released between 2010 and 2012.
Yeah, and can I mention something really fast about
Absolutely.
David? We added David to our band mid-recording of the album, the first album, and I got to tell you, David is born and raised in Austria. He is one of my best friends. Genuinely, he's a guy that I have always just felt I can trust him. He's my brother, and he is such a talent. I mean, freak show talent.
Yeah,
Josh Fries recorded most of the drums on our album, Josh Fries from A Perfect Circle. But David got to do one song. It was a song that we wrote right at the end of our sessions with Don, and that song was Your Wall. Which ended up
track number two.
Yeah, ended up being one of my favorite songs.
I know that. Maybe I shouldn't know that it's track number two.
Yeah,
it's track number two.
And David played the drums to that song. And anyone that knows drums or that just listens to the way an album is recorded can tell that wow, that's the Revis I heard live, because Your Wall had something special, and that was Dave. But anyways. So I just wanted to give a shout out to Dave because he still is probably my closest friend besides Bob, the bass player that I have today in Revis that I still speak with. David just got married and he lives in Austria with his wife now. I hope to see him soon. Regarding the sophomore album, it was a great idea. Originally, I didn't want to do an album or tour. I was just approached by David and Robert to record some songs and to just get some songs out to our fans. Like, mm-hmm. Hey, we're still alive. Nathaniel had been writing some songs. I had been writing some songs, and so had Robert. So we started collaborating. I would work on stuff here. I would fly out to L.A. whenever I'd scrounge up enough money to get out there. I'd record maybe four or five songs while I was out there and fly back. And then Robert and David, mostly Robert, though, would piece those together and make some really awesome stuff. We got the opportunity to record at NRG, which is where we recorded the first album. The owner is Jay Baumgartner, and we took it. We started recording there under the impression that we were going to be signed by them, and they were going to release our album. Now, this is when the embarrassing thing kind of comes up. Shame on us for recording there and not having something signed, because we should have done that. And we were old enough to know that we should have done that. But at the same time, we were getting such good stuff that we were just going to try to get as much stuff as we could recorded. We should have had something in paper before we started, like really started the ball rolling. But it was going so well. We were getting along with Jay and everybody so well that we were just like, you know what? Let's just keep doing it. We've got an album we're recording. We'll come to an agreement with them at some point. Well, when we were actually finished and we had the entire album done of Do We Have to Beg, I'd say we had about 13 songs, over half of them no one's heard, and besides the band and a couple of people. And that makes me really sad because they're actually amazing songs. They do still exist. NRG basically owns the recordings, not the songs themselves. We could re-record them, but a lot of people have been saying, hey, let's do a Kickstarter account. That's fine and dandy, but there's something special about music that you sometimes you can only catch it once.
Mm-hmm.
And
lightning in a bottle syndrome.
Exactly, and I think that Robert and David would agree with me that, yeah, we could do it again. We could record it again. But it would not be the same. And the recordings that we got were pretty darn good. Robert was doing some really awesome stuff with the production. He's so talented. You know, like, the guy really was driving the ship. He worked so hard. And I don't think I've ever told him that, but I know that he did. But things started to fall apart. Because we were given a contract that just was absurd. You know, it was basically saying that they were going to own everything. We weren't going to get paid really anything. And so we had this tour scheduled where we were going to, you know, start playing. And in the middle of the tour, we're saying, yeah, we don't really want to sign this contract. They just, like, left us out in the middle of Florida with no money. We had this big bandwagon that we had all of our stuff in, and we had no gas money. We literally went and played in Jacksonville, I remember. Hailstorm was there, Godsmack was there. There were a bunch of different bands there. I actually think some of the guys, the band from St. Louis, Cabo, was there. The guy, and we grew up playing with those guys in St. Louis. They were there, and it was good to see those guys. But we got there, and we were like, we're not signing this, you know. But you can't just leave us out here, you know. You're the ones that helped us get out here. You're not going to get us out here to force us to sign a contract.
Right.
And that's kind of where we were. We were kind of pinned. I felt more than anyone that we need to get out of this. You know, we need to get out of this. Robert and David wanted to keep going. So, you know, after me whining and saying I don't want to do it anymore, I finally gave in, and we went ahead and we went to Louisiana. We went to New Orleans, and we did our show there. It wasn't promoted. There was probably maybe 40 people there. So obviously the promoter didn't do his job. I think at that point plugs were being pulled as fast as they could at NRG's end, you know, to kind of say, you know, if you're not going to sign our thing, then we're not going to help you. That's what I speculate. Speculating can get people into trouble, but I'm pretty sure that's what was going on. So that's what happened. We came back, and that was really hard on us. That was really hard on me too, because I had given up my job. And at that point, I had two children and my wife at home. This was the last thing. You know, this was my last chance. And I put a lot of money into it.
Mm-hmm.
I devoted a lot of time away from my children and my wife. And it was starting to affect them. And that's when I drew the line, you know. I had to say to myself, first of all, I'm not in this for fame. I am in this for supporting my family and enjoying it. So I basically was done. And, you know, Robert, at one point, I think I read an article where he said I became absent. And, yeah, I was absent because I was done. You know, I didn't really want to go that far with this whole thing in the first place. But, you know, it kind of just caught, you know, I got caught up in it.
Yeah, snowballed a little bit on you.
I never wanted to tour again. I didn't. I really didn't. I did want to record music and share it with people. I've always felt that if this is a gift that God's given me, that I should share it. But when it starts to affect my family, then I don't believe that that's something God's wanting me to do. So that's when it started getting fishy and started to kind of downfall. And it makes me sad because I don't really speak to Robert anymore. I do speak to David and Bob, but I believe at some point we'll speak again, you know, and things will be on better terms. I by no means have anything but love for the guys that I've worked with, because we've all been through a lot, you know.
One of the things that, you know, Revis will be forever linked to, you know, nerds and comic books, because it was, I guess the year was 2003 or 2004, which I don't know exactly what year the movie came out, but Caught in the Rain is on the soundtrack to Daredevil, which I think
yeah.
was 2003.
It was three, yeah. It was three.
And so forever, you know, it now, you know, folks got to wait for the credits for it, which I thought was funny because I've seen the movie, and there's a scene where Ben Affleck and Jennifer Garner, or, you know, well, I guess they were not in costume, so it's Elektra and, you know, Matt Murdock. They're in the rain. I'm like, oh, Caught in the Rain. Hey, wait a minute. What's all this talking? Just play Caught in the Rain and shut up.
I know.
But you know, so how was that? I mean, does the studio come to you, or you know, did you write the song for that, or did they pick a song of yours? How does that process work?
No, Caught in the Rain was written months, if not a year, before that even happened. It had nothing to do with that movie. It was awesome to be able to be a part of that movie. But when after we had gotten signed, we were approached by Paulie Anthony, who was president of Epic at the time, and she said, you know, I think I can get you guys on a movie. We're doing a really killer soundtrack for this movie coming up with Ben Affleck. It's Daredevil. And immediately the comic book nerd in me was like, oh yeah, we got to do that. That's awesome, you know? And I was like, the whole time I thought, oh, well, I hope they find a really neat spot in the movie for us, you know? I'm really excited about that. Later I learned that we weren't going to be in the movie. It was just going to be a credit role. I was okay with that, too. Just to be a part of it was an honor for me. There was no ego there because I was just excited.
Mm-hmm.
But when I found out that we were the last one, like, my mom, I remember the night that it first opened, my brother, I think it was my brother Steve, he was like, hey, man, you know, I went to the movie, and I really almost gave up, and then, like, the last song was yours, and it was, people were actually saying, like, are you going to leave, you know, you need to leave the theater, and he's like, dude, my brother is in this song, or my brother's song is in this movie, I'm going to wait, and the guy was like, it's almost over, and he goes, it's the last song, bro. So, you know, it was neat. It was funny. I don't really like to take credit or like to brag about that too much because it's just like something silly, you know, it's at the end of it. But it was cool because it was a comic book movie. And it sold a lot of records.
And again, to kind of put, you know, close the book on the music part of this discussion, like I said, you can get iTunes, you know, Amazon, you can still pick up Places for Breathing. The stuff that was released between 2010 and 2012, I know that they can catch some music videos on YouTube, but is there any other place that they can go and catch any of those tracks? Or?
No, I don't know. None that I know of besides the stuff that you've listed. It's really kind of hard to find stuff. I think that even iTunes has taken some stuff down. They used to have the entire album. I don't even think it's up on iTunes anymore.
Places for Breathing?
Yeah, I don't think the entire album is. I think only Caught in the Rain 7 and acoustic Caught in the Rain is.
Hmm.
But anyways, I do know that you can get the album on Amazon pretty cheap. It's a fun album, you know. It's a great album to listen to and to work out to, you know. I mean, heck, it's my own music, and I used to jam out to it and run, you know, run while I was listening to it.
Like I said, I'm just kind of a big fan of that music side. But you're also, you know, creative in other ways. Like you said, you got you know, the art scholarship or the art tie-in. You spent that year in between Revis, we'll call, or you know, 2005 to 2010 or so. You start drawing some more. You worked with another one of our friends, Joe Dodd, who, you know, is an artist himself. You guys put out Grim Fairy Tales 1?
Yeah. Well, the first thing that Joe and I, you know, Joe was my friend even before I got signed. We were just both comic dork friends, you know, with Mikey. And I noticed that Joe was just a tremendous artist. He used to work at this little bookstore that Mike and I would visit that had a small, you know, selection of comic books, and I'd always look at this guy's sketches, and I was like, man, this guy's good. He's going to be, an artist someday, comic artist. And he did become a comic artist. Actually, while I was on tour with he got his first gig drawing, I believe he got his first gig drawing Human Torch, and CK gave him that job. But anyways, I remember he called me while I was in Pittsburgh. I was in Pittsburgh playing with Evanescence, Finger 11, and Cold, and he's like, dude, I got a job. Marvel just hired me. I'm going to be doing Human Torch. And I thought, man, that's so awesome, bro. And after I got out of the music industry, he had moved on. He had done a Hulk, and he started doing he got an option to do a Fantastic Four. And I had been practicing on inking, and I had a portfolio ready, and he was like, hey, you know what, bring your portfolio to Long Beach, to the Long Beach Comic Convention, and show my editor, who was, it's C.B. Sabowski, not C.K., sorry. And I was like, hey, yeah, I'll do it. I had like 7 or 8 pages. Mm-hmm. And I showed C.B., and Joe was like, you know, I'd really like to have this guy ink my stuff. And, and C.B. was like, okay, sounds good. And so he just gives me the job right then.
Nice.
And I fly back home, and I'm living with my wife, and son, and I'm an inker now. I'm not a lead singer anymore. I'm inking comics for Marvel, and it just rocked. We started with some Fantastic Four. We did a couple issues with a Fantastic Four, and then we started the Grim Fairy Tale #1 with Xenoscope, and that was a really, really cool issue that we did. I did that. We did some independent stuff, and you know, I still practiced. I still did a lot of stuff, but mostly for myself or for friends or just for stuff that I like to put up on DeviantArt. I kind of stopped doing it after a while because I wasn't getting enough work and I had to support my family, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I remember because I did the Grim Fairy Tale book, and you know, Joe and I did a great job on that book. It was a beautiful book. The artwork that Joe did was great. My inks were getting really tight, and I think he would agree with that we were both kind of rolling on all cylinders. But neither of us were, especially me, I could only do so much because I was just his inker. I wasn't someone else's. The money wasn't enough, so I got this job as a stock boy at Toys R Us. And talk about an ego buster, you know. I had went from being on the Jimmy Kimmel Show to being on Fuse to being, you know, around a bunch of really cool stuff. And I was waking up at 2 in the morning to show up at 3 to stock Barbies at a Toys R Us. And now, here's the cool thing is that I love toys. So as you can see in my man cave, I have Transformers and Voltron,
yeah,
and
everything. Which we're going to get to in a couple minutes.
But so that was cool. But it was also, that was a really hard time in my life because I was seeing a lot of people that knew me as the singer of Revis and were like, dude, what's this dude work? He's working at Toys R Us,
yeah.
You know, like, and that was hard for me, but I worked through it, you know, I worked through it, and I think it was a huge character shape, you know, it really shaped my character.
So you've done the inking, and you've collaborated with some good people, but you mentioned it, you know, let's get to this, because this, you're a lifelong nerd, and that's fine. We use that as a term of endearment on this show. Obviously, it's called Nerds United. But we're sitting in, we'll call it the back half of your man cave, really. And there are Transformers on, you know, covering shelves. Some of them are in the packages, you know, on the walls. You've got Voltron here. And by golly, I'm sitting exactly to my left. Five of the original members of the New 52 Justice League. I've got Green Lantern sitting right next to my Green Lantern tattoo, man. I am marking out like nobody's business.
You're drawing power from him right now.
But I feel it.
Those are
the brightest day.
Those are how do you pronounce it?
Kotobukiya.
Kotobukiyas.
Sure.
And they're really cool because they have magnets on their feet, and they each come with a stand that's interconnecting, and they stick right to the stand. I don't know. I love Jim Lee, and so when he redesigned the New 52 Justice League, and they came out with these statues, I was like, man, I got to get these. So I'm waiting on Superman.
Cyborg, I believe.
Cyborg. And I'm also waiting. Oh no! I got Wonder Woman. So I'm waiting on Superman and Cyborg, and both of those are ordered. I'm just waiting for them to come in.
We got to talk about your. I don't want to say obsession, but Transformers
it,
is.
It is an obsession. There's an ant there. Sorry.
But there's nothing wrong with it. We went and saw what Transformers 2 and 3. I think at the midnight releases up in Mount Vernon, we saw. The Avengers midnight showing.
Yeah, The Avengers was after I got my vasectomy. I know that everybody would like to know that. That's when you get your balls cut.
I remember that you were awfully sore,
dude. I was so sore.
And we saw Dark Knight Rises,
dude. Dark Knight's so good.
So,
I think it was really good.
No one knew who I was until I put on the mask.
And the mask.
So, but we gotta talk about Transformers.
Sure.
old school, I mean old 1980s cartoon Transformers? I mean, is that where it started for
That's
you?
Where it started, yeah, and I'll tell you why. When I was little, they were kind of off limits. My mom and dad did not like me playing with guns, with toys that had guns and that promoted violence. You know, kind of grew up in a strict religious household, which is awesome. You know, I'm a godly man. I am. It actually stayed with me to this day. But I don't know. The lack of it made me even more obsessed with it. And
the forbidden fruit.
Right,
so to speak.
The forbidden fruit. And, yeah, like it's horrible, right? But so I started to really crave like G.I. Joe, Transformers. I really fell in love with Transformers, and I'll tell you one of the main reasons why was. I remember watching an episode, I believe it was in the first season, later on, when you had the Destructicons, but the Autobots didn't have a combiner yet. And the first combiner, I believe it was Superion. There may be, some people may come in and be like, no, you're totally wrong, and if I am, that's fine. But I fell in love with combiners. You know, I fell in love with these robots that not only turned into vehicles, but they could also come together and form like huge dudes that fought each other. You know, I thought
Hello,
that was
Voltron.
So cool. Yeah, Voltron. I mean, like, and Voltron was even before that, because I would watch Voltron and Thundercats, and I fell in love with that stuff. I just, the designs at that time that they were coming out with were just awesome. I wasn't a part of the Star Wars era.
Mm-hmm.
It came before my time. I was born in 80. So by that time, two of the movies had already come out?
Yeah.
Two of the Star Wars movies had already come out, I believe. Anyways, I was more into like Mask. You know, we had Voltron, we had He-Man was awesome. Wheeled Warriors, and of course Transformers, and anything that was similar to that. I loved G.I. Joe's.
I fell in love with all those 80s cartoons. There was just something special, something magical about them. The artwork was amazing, and as a kid that kind of had like a strict you know, guidelines to his life, I was just grasping for anything, and so when I did get the okay from my mom and dad to start getting toys, the first thing I was buying was a Transformer, mm-hmm. man. I mean, like, I think they were the MicroMasters. My grandma, Margaret, she was awesome. She bought me something huge. She bought me this huge spaceship with this little dude, and it was a little car, man, and it was a Transformer. It was a MicroMaster. It was just great, man. I fell in love with it. And I remember also one time she took me to Dobbs, this store in Mount Vernon that had literally everything. Like you could get anything there. You could get a truck there. You could get flowers there. You could get anything.
This was before, you know, like the Walmart Target craze. I mean,
like Walmart existed, but like Dobbs was like it had everything, but like it was weird, you know. And I remember that they had Voltron there, and they had some He-Man figures. And my grandma bought me, she bought me a Voltron figure and one of the characters. It was Pidge, and dude, I just loved my Pidge character. And I remember one time when I was little. I lost him because I was playing with him out in by my pool. I was digging in the dirt, and I was like having him run through tunnels and stuff. And I think somebody called me, and I ran inside, and I totally forgot all about. I left Pidge outside. It was like Toy Story, you know. I left him outside, and the next day I went out, and I could not find him. And I was bawling. I was like asking my mom about it. I was like, Mom, I can't find Pidge. She's like, what's a Pidge? and I'm like, he's the Green Lion's pilot. And she's like, what are you talking about? And I was like, I had him outside in the dirt. And she goes, honey, I repotted flowers yesterday after you left, or after you went to bed, or whatever, you know, took a nap. So like, I was like, wait, you repotted
you
flowers?
Buried Pidge?
You buried Pidge underneath this stupid cactus? Or, you know, underneath your marigolds. So, like, dude, hardcore, I went outside, and I went, and I was looking everywhere. I was digging, and finally I dumped the last clay pot out, and there's Pidge, and he's all stained and all this dirt and worms, and I'm like, poor Pidge. I took him to bath with me that night and cleaned him up. I did lose his helmet forever, so I never got that green helmet back. But that's, you know, that was, I fell in love, that's when I started to fall in love with just... just nerddom in general, man. Like, I just thought it was so cool.
My face hurts from smiling with that story, because you can see, you know, you're getting into that story. You're like, bitch!
Yeah, dude.
You know, I mean, I'm like, smiling so big, because, I mean, that's childhood in the 80s, and, you know, I look at it, I don't know if kids today have anything like that.
I don't either. I hope they do, because man,
you got three
I
of them.
Because I and because I loved that guy. You know what I mean? Like I probably slept. He probably was like my teddy bear. He was probably in my hand when I was sleeping, because like we didn't have a lot of money. I had three other brothers, and you know you can only buy so many toys for mm-hmm. the boys. So like it's not like I was gonna get every Lion and every Pilot. So I got that one. You know, I got that one. I had Pidge. And I held on to him, man. I had his green key that he came with. I did lose his helmet, but you know what? I had him. He was fine. I was excited.
And you know, being an adult, it allows you to, you know, go back and reclaim or upgrade some of these childhood treasures. We're sitting in here, and I see, you know, the newly released bigger model Voltron
from Mattel.
Line.
Yeah, these came out a couple years ago from Mattel, around the time that the Lion Force was trying to make a comeback. I bought the Mattel. I'd call them the classic. They're not as nice as the metal ones, but they're really big. They're robust.
big boned.
I got to tell you, they are very cool to play with. Each one of the pilots fits in them just like the old Panache Place ones, the ones that have the ones that you can see right there that have the chrome legs. These are definitely a lot cooler. They're a lot more poseable. And when he's attached and he's combined, he's like 24, 25 inches tall. There's his blazing sword right there.
Holy
I've got
cow.
I've got one of the swords that's blazing, and then this one is the one without the blaze. But anyways, I told my wife that Mattel was having a Lion Force, and that they were going to be releasing these like 2 or 3 months at a time.
Did she look at you like you were crazy?
She was like, "Well, she was like, you already collect Transformers, you know. I mean, if you got to do it, you got to do it." And I was like, "I have to do it because they're awesome, honey." And so I did it. I did it. I paid the money every other month, and I got each Lion, and the last Lion to get was the black one, and he was, you know, he formed the head, and it was awesome, man.
I know, you know, my wife not a nerd, but she tolerates my nerd.
It tolerates, yeah, I like
nerddom.
That.
You know, I've got my man cave, which is, you know, less figures, but a lot of books, a lot of comic books, and I think it's uncomfortable for her when, you know, my comic book shop, Twilight Comics, I plug them and here all the time. For free. I don't know why I plug them. But
I like that place. They're nice there.
They're good there. And but you know, if she's in the area and I haven't been there in a while, so she'll sometimes, you know, pop in there. She knows I have a pole folder. She'll be like, the stuff in Greg Mahochko's folder, I guess.
Oh yeah.
You know,
she's all embarrassed about it.
Well, she'll make the. You know, she went in there the first time she went in there. I mean, now they have some female, you know, clerks and workers, but they didn't at the time. So the first time she went in there, she's like, I am the only girl in here, you know, so it's a bit of a take that, welcome to my world now. But so, you know, sometimes she'll go in there. I've had my parents, you know, who don't understand it at all either. You know, they're like, why do you have a Green Lantern tattoo? What the hell is a Green Lantern? And I think last year for Christmas it was either my parents or my sister got me a Twilight Comics gift card.
Nice.
They're like,
what a great gift.
Yeah, it's like, thanks, perfect, that's what I want. Like, I'm never going in there again. That's what they would say. Like, that people are weird.
Oh yeah!
I said, those are my people. Shut up. As I look around the room, I got to bring attention to another one of my favorite cartoons growing up, and I know it was yours. And you've taken your love of these characters, and I'm really excited to talk about this as well. We'll get to that in a couple minutes. But Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles over my right shoulder.
Yes.
And it looks like, I mean, these are new figures. They're all in their box, but they are the, you know, late 80s, early 90s. Style that we grew up with.
Yeah, they're just they Playmates came up with the classic collection, which is basically they're re-releasing Rocksteady, Bebop, and the Four Ninja Turtles in a 6-inch you know, tribute, and they have a bunch of a lot better articulation. The packaging is basically the same as the old school one. Along with these 6-inch figures, they're also releasing 4-inch figures of the four turtles. They're doing Shredder, Splinter, And I believe they may be doing April Rocksteady and Bebop in 4-inch too again, but those are basically just the same as what came out when we were young. But these are the upgraded ones, and I had to get them because they look super poseable, and eventually they will not be up there in package. I'm going to play with them. I'm not that guy that like puts stuff up and then doesn't play with it. I eventually open everything up.
Now, I mean, I remember the turtle figures of, you know, our childhood. They made so many and so many very – like, I remember – there's hockey playing Leonardo.
It was really hard to keep up with.
I mean, and obviously, you know, they knew eventually they had a money train. Like, let's ride it till it falls off the tracks.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, they did that, and there were a ton of B and C characters that, like, maybe didn't even show up on the cartoon, but maybe were, like, in a comic book, or they just made the toy, and it just never was in anything. But we were suckers. We were going to buy it, mm-hmm. you know? The different versions of all four turtles that they would do, like you said, the sport versions or the aqua Michelangelo or whatever, they were pretty cool, you know? And I mean, like, I was going to buy it if I had the money to. At the time, I think they were about $4 a piece. Now they're $10 or $11 a piece.
They're not $4
a piece. Yeah, they're
anymore.
Not $4 a piece.
It's not even a buck an inch, you know?
You know, the one thing that Ninja Turtles had going for them is that they really took after G.I. Joe and... they made vehicles, and they made a bunch of really cool vehicles. I mean, like, who in the world would have ever guessed that you could get a blimp and that you could, like, they would make a toy blimp for your Ninja Turtles? Because I still have mine, and it still holds air. And my son was like, this is the coolest thing in the world. It's a freaking blimp, and mm-hmm. I'm, you know, you can put the guys on it and stuff. It's really cool, you know? And if I had a helium tank, I'd fill it up with helium.
And I like how, I mean, you... smart in the that, you know, a lot of these things you didn't throw anything away, so that your kids, you know, when they're old enough, you know, and they're going to play with them responsibly and not break them, you know, they can get them out and play them too.
Yeah, exactly. And my son Dash, he really enjoys them. I do let him play with them. I don't care. And to be honest, I don't hover over him either. I let him play with them. Mm-hmm. He's much more of a gamer than I was at his age. He is into toys, but not a big Ninja Turtle guy. The funny thing is that he's a big Pokemon kid. And so Pokemon is his Ninja Turtles. Or to him, his Pokemon is to me Ninja Turtles. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, like, to each their own. But he does play with them. He plays with my old Masters of the Universe, my old He-Man stuff. And he also plays with, I let him play with my Transformers too, unless they're really expensive figures. And then then he knows, what the warnings are, you know,
nice.
Gotta be careful.
Nice. We've talked, you know, about toys. We've talked about your contributions, your creations. What books, you know, what heroes or titles have you gravitated towards in your life as far as, you know, on the reading side of it?
I was always a fan of art more than I was story, and it's not
so. The '90s were perfect for you.
The '90s
were really art driven.
Yeah, they were. And it wasn't because I didn't like to read. I did like to read, but I was just an artist at that time, so I was really focusing on how people were drawing. Some of the best. What I was really excited about was I always loved Bart Sears. I always loved Joe Quesada. I fell in love with Joe Madureira. I thought that the stuff that he started doing with the Uncanny X-Men and then developing Battle Chasers, that just blew my mind. It was the perfect combination of manga and American style, and it was just his style, you know. And I think he's a great artist, and he's still developing today, whether he's doing video games like Darksiders or whether he's doing the Wolverine stuff that he's doing right now. That guy's a great artist. I really looked up to him, and I still do. I also really enjoyed Adam Hughes and Travis Charest, who worked on Wildcats after Jim Lee stopped. And Jim Lee's another one, you know. Jim Lee with X-Men or with X-Men was just the bomb. I loved that stuff. The first time I ever saw Jim Lee was when they made the production of like 75 billion number one issues of X-Men number one. You know, the gatefold cover.
Was that the Uncanny X-Men?
No, it would have just been X-Men. Oh, okay. Because Uncanny was at like number 200 or 300 or something then. This was when they relaunched just X-Men.
Gotcha.
And he drew the cover. And they made like 5 different color variants of it. And they also made like, dude, that has to be the most printed comic in the world, because I still see it today in the stands. But that's when I fell in love with Jim Lee. And that was even before I knew about Joe Madureira or anybody, because they weren't even really around. But people like him, I art or writing wise, you know, I love Alan Moore. I love Alan Moore.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and is it because the social,
yes,
aspects that he writes into his stories?
I find his literature to be just that. It's literature. It's actually really smart. It's not a comic. It may be organized that way in stores and stuff as, say, Watchmen.
I think Watchmen would play out very well if it was in a novel form and not in a comic.
I agree. I found it beautiful. You know, and that's a nerdy thing to say, but and that's what this is all about. I thought that Watchmen was a beautiful story because it was honest, because it seemed like it could be realistic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I find amazing about it. I like Frank Miller too. I wasn't always a huge fan of how gory his work was. That was kind of like his you know, thing, like, you know, lots of
a bit of his trademark.
Yeah, his trademark was gore and boobs, and he did them great, you know. He did them great, but he was also, you know, I also was more in love with Frank as an artist than I was a writer. A lot of people might spit on that comment, but that's just for me. I loved his artwork. I thought that he drew the way a film director pictured pointing the camera.
A specific style.
Yes. Well, I felt like he had a certain way of, let's like The Dark Knight. The way that he drew that and inked it, it was almost like looking at a storyboard of a cartoon movie. He really had a good way of taking the way he visualized the character placements were really special, you know.
Since you brought up you know, Frank Miller and The Dark Knight, have you been able to you know, sit down? DC, I think, has been doing some really good things as far as you know, direct to video. Have you been able to watch The Dark Knight Returns Part 1 or Part 2?
Oh yeah, I think, let's see, I saw part of the first one. I have the second one, but I haven't opened it up yet. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think DC's on a roll right now.
They're doing a lot of stuff with
everything, actually.
And I think, you know, from the film side, I think that they're doing right you know, on the animated side. And Marvel, you know, up until, really, I think up until 2013 Comic-Con, where we finally got the Batman-Superman announcement, I thought Marvel had been, you know, way out in front. And I still think they have a sizable lead on the film side because of what they've been doing, integrating all their characters into the, you know, eventual Avengers.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think... It's really hard to judge them too hard. I don't want to judge either any of them too harshly. A lot of guys... are all about judging them and saying, you know, like, well, they, you know, Bryan Singer screwed up the X-Men this way, or mm-hmm. blah, 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 or the Fantastic Four was bad because of this. I think that everybody, I think that everybody just needs to chill out and just, like, try to enjoy at least a part of what these movies are bringing, because they're not going to be perfect, because you're not the director. You know what I mean? Everyone can't be the director of the movie. Everyone can't be the writer of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are going to be upset. I try to enjoy it from the kid's point of view. The way that I enjoyed Tim Burton's Batman.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's goofy, it's a little silly, but I was still a pretty young kid then.
You'd have been 9, I guess.
Yeah, I would.
Came out 89.
Right, I would have been 9. I really found that really was cool to me. It made it. It was different. It caught the comic book style. I look back at it now, and it's, a lot of it bothers me. But I still tried to look at all the movies in that
9-year-old frame of mind.
Yeah, that 9-year-old frame of mind. I mean, like, watching Superman this year come out, The Man of Steel come out, a lot of people were giving it a hard time. Zack Snyder is one of my favorite directors.
I still think that was a phenomenal movie.
I think it was a beautiful movie.
I think a lot of people, you know, crapped on it because the last however long of it was two guys destroying a city by fighting each other. But I think even with that part, because of, you know, Superman Returns being so non-punchy, and that you needed a nice battle. I'm a big fan of that one.
Yeah, but you know what? Like I said, I even like Superman Returns. I find something I like in all of them. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as it compared to Man of Steel, there is no comparison.
Right.
Man of Steel was amazing. I think that it was just, I think it was very well thought out. If the worst thing that you can come up with is the color of someone's hair, you know, that it's not the same color as it should be, like Lois Lane or whatever, give me a break. Come on, guys. Let's get over it. I thought that the ideas behind it all were really well done, you know, and I can't wait to see what they do with him and Batman. I think it's going to be great.
I'm really excited. 2015 is going to be a big year. You've got Man of Steel 2 with, you know, the Superman Batman conflict. You get Avengers 2. You get Star Wars Episode 7. 2015 is going to be just nerdrific.
Well, now what do we get next year? Is next
Guardians
year
Guardians of the Galaxy?
And we get Days of Futures Past, X-Men.
Yes, and also Captain America 2.
Okay, so that'll be a good
Winter
year,
Soldier.
Too. Yeah, that'll be a
and
good
Thor's
year.
Thor's still coming out this year.
Oh,
yet, so.
Now, is 2015 T4? Or is that 2014?
My eyes are wide on that. I'm not
sure.
On
the Transformers 4? I don't know. Is that next year, or is that the... I think it's next year.
I'd have to do some look. I don't know. You would probably have a better handle.
It's called Age of Extinction. So I'm hoping it has the Dinobots in it. That'll be cool.
But it's not going to have Shia LaBeouf.
That's good.
I think Mark Wahlberg.
He is in it. Mark Wahlberg's in it.
Is it still Michael Bay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Plenty of explosions and boobies or whatever he does. Yeah. He's always got a pretty girl in there, and he does a close-up on her hips and her lips. And then there's some smart-arse kid like Shia LaBeouf. But, you know, like I think we just got, like, it just got oversaturated when it came to Shia. I don't think he's a bad actor. I just think it was like, okay, come on. If this is a Transformers movie, let's see some more Transformers and less Shia, because, like, all he does is just say cynical things and stutter.
and you know, I think it's funny because it doesn't seem like that long ago when he was, you know, the annoying little brother on Even Stevens, and now I'm kind of dating myself there because that show doesn't feel like it was that long ago.
Yeah, I know. I know. That's kind of weird.
We're weird. We're old. before we get, you know, a couple things we got to cover before we wrap up this episode of Nerds United. I know recently you picked up the pencil again and started sketching again, and for a great cause. You've been, you know, through your own personal, you know, Facebook page, you put sketches up, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, 3 so far: Deadpool, Wolverine, which was the latest one, and Leonardo.
And
you're doing that. You're auctioning them off. You know, $5. You know, bid increase or something like that. And you're taking the money and you're putting it towards Toys for Tots.
Yeah. You know, obviously, I have a special place in my heart for toys. I think that a child's imagination is one of the most precious things that it's one of the only things that a child has control over, and toys are a special part of that, and I wanted to be able to use my gift to give to others. So I'm doing a lot of studying, and I'm learning a lot of anatomy. And I figured while I'm doing this, if I'm gonna have any type of outlet, it should be drawing. So I was talking to my wife about it, and we decided that I should start auctioning off pieces of artwork, and I'll donate that to the Marine Toys for Tots. They do wonderful things for children, not only with toys, but for clothing, for children. It's almost all the money that you give to them. I mean, just a minute amount goes for promotion. because it's, you know, it's so well known, and they do, they almost every dollar goes to them. And so what I do is I do these auctions on online on Facebook, because I have quite a bit of Facebook friends, and they've all been very generous. Actually, I think the auction for my latest Wolverine has probably ended, so I'm excited to see how much that went for. But I like to draw, and I'm not gonna hang every drawing up that I do, so I might as well get a little bit of money out of them. And whenever I get the check sent to me from whoever the winning bidder is, I take that and I have them make it out to Toys for Tots, and I just I send it into Marine Toys for Tots and make the donation in their name, and they'll receive a nice letter from them thanking them, and I send them the picture, and they get to have a picture done by me, and I'm excited about it. It's just nothing but positive things in my book.
And I know you. I think you just put the Wolverine out yesterday.
Yeah.
Kind of a quick 24-hour auction. Last bid I think was about $45.
Yeah.
So you know that person's, you know, gonna get an original sketch of Wolverine.
Yeah.
That they can frame and you know hang on their wall. What I'm curious to know is, would you be ever, you know, obviously, you know, this is for the good cause of Toys for Tots. Would you ever just, you know, somebody says, hey, Justin, I'd like to, you know, commission you to do a sketch of, oh, I don't know, how about the Green Lantern punching Batman in his face or something, you know, silly like that.
Of course I would, you know.
do those custom orders.
Yeah, yeah. I've got two more drawings to do. I'm doing a Batman, and then I'm doing a Superman that I'm going to put up for the auction, and then that's when I'm going to stop, and that'll be what I do for Toys for Tots. But I am willing to do commissions, and starting after Thanksgiving, I'm doing another round of what I'm calling my team illustrations, where I'm going to do classic teams like Fantastic Four, maybe Teen Titans.
Mm-hmm.
I also plan on trying to do a few, you know, maybe some X-Men, maybe some Marvel characters in team poses, and I'm going to auction those off for St. Jude's and send all that money to St. Jude's to help with their cancer research and for the children suffering with cancer. That's something else that's very important to me to support.
See, now that's, you know, just, again, the giving nature. You know, not a lot of people have talent. You know, a lot of people use that talent, but not everybody uses that talent to give back. So this is a big step in the high five, you know, direction. The drawings, the sketches are amazing. I've shared a couple of. I think I shared Leonardo and Wolverine on the Nerds United Facebook page. You know, try to get to, you know, see if anybody, you know, over on that. We have a very few numbers right now on the Nerds United following, but we're looking to add to that. Just tremendous artwork for a great cause, and you know, I don't. You're probably not doing it for attention, but you know, your efforts should be commended.
I appreciate that, and no, I'm not. But I am being selfish in the fact that I love to draw. So if I, you know, I am getting something out of it, and it's practice, and it's the fact that I love drawing, and I love getting better at it. And I know that I will always be getting better at it. And for that, that's where I'm being selfish. And so that's what I'm getting
that's
out of
it. That's
the
payoff for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have one favorite superhero?
One favorite superhero. Wow, that's tough. To just name one. Probably Optimus Prime. I mean, if he's a superhero,
he's been in comic books. He's had a couple movies.
You know, I mean, like
I'm not saying no. I think that's perfectly.
I think that I'd have to say Optimus Prime because of his leadership. You know, and that's something that always stuck with me. That, you know, I just think he's awesome. Just think he's such a cool character.
That's, you know, an Optimus Prime. If you don't know who Optimus Prime is, if you're listening to this, I'm not sure you're listening to the right podcast. But we finish up every show on Nerds United. I ask the guest, which would be you, to give me, in your mind, your opinion of who you think would be the three biggest nerds. And, you know, for the sake of familiarity, you know, celebrity nerds, if you will. Some of the ones that have popped up, Joss Whedon, Patton Oswalt, Will Wheaton. Some of the Kevin Smith's been named. So who would you, this is, surprise. This is your pop quiz for the show. Who would you name as three celebrity? And you can, obviously repeat any of the ones that I've said already.
That are celebrities that are into comic books?
Well, based on what you know about them, maybe their works, things that they've done, would categorize them as a nerd.
Okay. Seth Green.
Okay.
Definitely. But I love what he does with I love
Robot Chicken.
That's great. I think that's his way of paying tribute to what we grew up with, and I think that that's really cool. So him for sure. I think that our love-hate relationship with M. Night Shyamalan, I'd have to probably list him. I think that he is he's got some really good taste. I wish he wouldn't have ruined the Avatar series for us with the Airbender, but I think that he is a secret nerd that I have to look up to because he's pulled off a couple of beauties. You can't get every one of them right, but if you get two beautiful movies out of about 10, I'm still going to give you some good credit because he has.
Let me see if I can correctly identify the ones that you're thinking as beautiful
Please.
Movies. Sixth Sense?
Sixth Sense would have to be one of them.
The only other one I'm thinking, Signs came to mind, but I don't think that's where your mind is. I'm thinking Unbreakable.
Unbreakable. That's funny that you say that. It's not Unbreakable. Even though I love that movie, it'd have to be Lady in the Water.
Okay.
I think that movie is pretty awesome.
Wait, that's to my fault. That's not one I've seen. So
yeah, I think you'd enjoy it. I think that it's definitely got some weird stuff in it, but it also I believe it's Paul Giamatti that's in it.
I think so.
And he's brilliant.
Is that Cate Blanchett?
I don't know.
No.
But I know that I love Paul Giamatti, and he was wonderful in it.
So, all right. So we've got two then: Seth Green, M. Night Shyamalan.
For number three, let's see. Man, I don't really. It's hard for me to because I don't know too many celebrities. I don't really watch that much TV. I watch cartoons, but I do. Let me just say this. I don't know if he's a huge comic book guy, but I am a huge Nathan Fillion fan.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll have to put him.
That's there. Fine.
That ties him into Joss Whedon. And I think Nathan Fillion...
he's a big Green Lantern fan.
And he would be a great Green Lantern.
He has done the voice for a couple of Green Lanterns.
Yeah, he
animated,
did for the DC animated.
I'm trying to think now. I think it was Emerald Knights.
Yes,
and,
you're right.
I think it was First Flight. First Flight it was. Green Lantern First Flight.
Yes,
and
you're
then,
right.
Justice League Doom.
I love Nathan Fillion. I think he's great.
And Firefly.
Yeah.
Castle.
Yeah. Serenity.
Serenity. You're Dr. Horrible. Yeah, sing along block.
Dude, I mean, like, Castle's one of my favorite shows, I think that the guy just, he makes everything special.
And he seems like he's a genuinely fun guy.
Yeah.
He kind of gets it. He's not one of those who's, too good for the fans.
Not at all.
So,
not at all.
Nathan Fillion, that's a tremendous trio, sir. So excellent. Justin Holman, I've got to say, it's been a lot of fun sitting here with you. We've talked for over an hour, almost an hour and a half, but not quite there yet. This, I imagine, is going to be one of the favorite episodes we've had. I want to thank you for joining me on Nerds United because it's been – I've learned things that I didn't know, both about your art and your music career, things, little nuances of the band that I didn't pick up on. So I gotta send you a big shout out and a big thank you for joining me on Nerds United.
Hey, thanks for having me on Nerds United, man. I would love to do it again and maybe get into deeper detail about something else. I really appreciate you having me on because you know that my heart is just with love for everybody and especially with the geek society.
And I know my plan, since you, Mike, and I all, we're all good friends, I'm going to have him on the show sometime, get that introductory show out the way, and then, after a little while, the three of us can sit down and knock out a show and cover a lot of ground.
That sounds great, man.
That's Justin Holman. I'm Greg Mahochko. This is Nerds United, and we will see you down the road.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.